Positive Talk, where Shane ends and nothing is off limits. Brought to you by Advocating for Sex Positive Education and Consent Culture, EmpoweredHearts.com, and GTFOradio.ca. I'm your host, Angel, queer femby, sexuality educator, and sex coach.
You know that podcast that I did with that individual who had come to Taste of King? Did I tell you about this?
Which person?
So we had a person came to one of our events who had been to Taste of King, and I invited them to be on the podcast because we just really had an interesting conversation about how kink can be a medium by which you can reconnect with your body. And it really fascinated me because I think that's what drew me to kink in the first place, is because it allowed me to work through some of my own sexual trauma, I guess, but in a way where I was empowered and safe. And I think I was way too young to, like, put that all together, like, way too unaware.
Yeah.
Because young is the wrong word. But I was on her podcast, and I didn't realize, but Taste of Kink changed her life.
Oh.
And how's that for, like, gratifying,
that's
right?
Pretty gratifying, considering it's a pretty simple show, but yeah.
Kevin, you know, like, remember when we first were setting up Taste of Kink, we were talking about a local event that was kind of similar, except that all the presenters seemed to use it as a way to
touch people
and hurt people when those people hadn't really signed up for that.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, like,
I was just thinking of the tasting booths at that 3-day event.
Yeah.
Remember where I was too dommy for the doms, so they all had to one-up me.
Like, and it was just wild, because you're, like, one of the most laid-back people I've ever met. But, like, so there's this event where you travel through the space, going from one booth to another, and it's set up like a carnival.
Wait. There was an event.
Oh, there was an event.
Past
it. Yeah. And it was a big deal. Like, people came from all over the place to this 3-day event. But on your opening night, they set up this, like, tasting thing where you could go around, and there are people who are supposedly really good at these things.
Experts.
Experts. That's right. They were masters and mistresses of their trades.
Their craft.
And you could, you know, you could try spanking. You could try getting tied up. You could, well, I don't actually remember them having any rope.
No rope.
But violet wand,
yeah,
and TENS units and floggings and even needles.
Yeah, I guess so.
Cupping. What else did they have?
Whipping.
I don't remember there ever being whips.
When Crone was there. Daddy Crone?
Oh, I thought that must be the one we skipped because we were hanging out with the... So I can't see myself having passed that one.
I don't think you were in your whip exploration phase yet.
Oh, okay. I don't remember it at all.
Yeah, I just remember Daddy Crone doing, like, that little dance.
Yeah.
And whipping someone with a single tail and being like, no, that's not for me.
Yeah, so you could go around, and they encouraged tops and bottoms. And the way they did this is you got coins for participating. And at the end of the event, whoever had the most coins would win the prize.
But let's clarify one thing. Doms got more coins than subs.
Yeah.
So it was pretty funny because a dom trying, like, a flogging would get a gold coin, which is worth, like, 5 silver coins. But a sub doing it, well, you know, they enjoy that stuff anyways. They only get 1 silver coin.
Yeah, very, very fucked up.
Yeah.
But every booth we went to, the tops were deliberately trying to harm you.
Well, yeah, they were trying to get... basically a reaction out of me that was indicating, you know, I couldn't handle it or whatever. Like, they wanted me to scream, basically. So...
And none of the other doms were screaming, so I don't understand why it was a thing.
I was, like, the newest face there and one of the youngest ones, too, to be fair.
So this is, like, some sort of initiation thing, maybe?
I think it's kind of like a hazing, yeah. Because certainly, like... before this event, I had already gotten way into electroplay. And so, you know, generating sparks and shocks from electric devices. And it didn't bother me. Like, I could zap myself all day, and I could feel it, but it wasn't hurting me, even on the high settings. And the guy who was doing the electroplay booth, he didn't like that, you know, he zapped me once, and I just was like, yeah, I can feel that. And so he kind of, like, cranked it up, zapped me again, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's the higher setting. So he... He put on this, what's called a lightning rod attachment, which is just a metal spike that directly conveys it instead of, you know, dampening the shock.
Yeah.
And he poked me through my clothes and shocked basically the head of my penis and actually left a red mark on the shaft of my cock.
It was there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a couple days before it faded. So it was a pretty heavy shock. And I mean, it made me jump. But even then, it was like, I wasn't really able or willing to give him the satisfaction of yelping. It was more like, what the fuck, dude? I didn't ask for that.
Yeah, and it was the same at the flogging thing. Like, fuck, he was trying so hard to hurt you that he wrapped your face.
Yeah, yeah, he grabbed the biggest flogger he had with two hands. And this was a friend of ours, to be clear. So it's not like he didn't understand, you know, why we were there or our experience levels or anything like that. But as he was flogging me with a regular flogger, I just wasn't yelping and twitching. So he went to the biggest one he had, swung it so hard, he missed my back, wrapped the falls around my neck and my cheek from behind. And he looked embarrassed as fuck. I mean, he had that moment of, oh shit, you know, I've
fell prey to the culture of this event.
Yeah, even if he wasn't consciously aware of it at the time.
But, like, the whole event was kind of, like, rapey like that.
It was.
Like, you'd go to vendors, and you would be looking at their stuff, and some of them, well, particularly the one that ended up, you know, with a police file with my name on it.
Many names on it.
Yeah, with many names on it, but, like, you know, assaulted me. He would just grab whatever you were looking at, smack you with it. Yeah. And honestly, he wasn't the only one. Like, there were other vendors that behaved that way, too.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the worst.
Presenters, same thing. You go to someone's class, and if you showed too much interest, they might just jerk you up in front, and you're the new demo person. Yeah. So, like, consent wasn't really being modeled. And yet, we loved the idea of the tasting booth, but really resented that it's designed for new people. And they would come and get this idea that this is how you behave.
Yeah.
And, like, how fucked up is that? And so you got brand new people coming to the kink community, and you're teaching them that the whole point is to find ways to make it so people's consent isn't part of the conversation.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, that is kind of where the community was coming from, historically. Like,
Well, because almost like we're from a curiarchal society.
Yeah, and well, I mean, if you go further back to, like, you know, the gay leather bar scene, there was a lot of mindset, you know, from the old school people that we knew from that era, that if you came to the bar, you were there to get fucked or beaten or whatever, so they weren't even bothering to ask because they knew why you were there. It's like, if you're in the sex swing, I'm just going to come over there and, you know,
do whatever,
lube up. And you should be cool with that because you showed up here. And I actually had that explained to me verbatim by an elderly gay leatherman as the environment that he was introduced to kink and homosexuality.
That's just sad.
It probably explains a lot of himself.
I mean, unless this was explained at the door and you were like, fuck yeah, slutty sex and I don't have to take responsibility for it, awesome. But that also means that you have people who are doing it to press those boundaries and pass them.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where my problem is. Because, like, I'm all for, you know, take control and use me as your sex toy.
Yeah.
But within those boundaries and with respect for my person,
yeah.
To
be really clear here, when I was saying, you know, to be fair, I'm just saying that is where the mindset originated, not that any of their actions were appropriate.
No, absolutely. But, like, this is, and it's still common in gay culture now,
yeah,
for that to be very non-consensual. I mean, don't even start with how gay men treat women.
Oh, it's so much shame. Yeah.
You know, so, like, not all gay men.
Yes.
Yeah, the kink community at the time, before we opened our doors, we had never found anything that actually embodied the consent that they talk about.
No, they talked about it a lot.
Yeah, and that's great. And the education and even the idea of the event was amazing. And, I mean, I went back for years up until he who shall not be named assaulted me at the event, right? Like, it was always going. Yeah. As often as I could get up there, it was going. Because you do get to try the things, and you do get to go see people who've been doing the same thing for a long time show you how they develop those skills. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing. Great idea.
Valuable resources.
But why are we disrespecting people's bodily autonomy and ignoring the fact that we're teaching them by our actions that this is how you behave?
Well, not just that, but in the same day hosting classes about consent and how important it is, and the history of consent in our community. It's like you can't actually do both.
And then reach out and grab someone's ass who never asked to be grabbed. Yeah.
It's like you gotta pick one and say, this is who we are. Be honest, you know. And if you're gonna have a no holds barred, we do what we want community, let people know that at the door when they're coming in. And
then, wow, but then you would only get doms and no bombs.
Well, that's kind right? of the problem, isn't it?
And so, anyways, like this event was what started Taste of Kink.
Yeah.
And so we decided that instead of just letting, like, taking people who are well known in the community for doing XYZ, whether that's vlogging, rope, whatever, that we were going to teach our volunteers how to model consent in those interactions and make other people also model setting boundaries and, like, that kind of thing. So it included a pretty intense orientation, which the event that we used to go to, there was no orientation.
No.
Like, you just, that was your first event.
Have at her.
Yeah. You show up in your gear and you go from booth to booth. Nobody told you that you could set boundaries, that you could say, no, I'm keeping my clothes on.
Yeah.
You know, nobody talked about that. So our orientation, we talk about, like, you're in charge of this. So if you decide that you would like to try being spanked, you have to negotiate that and set those boundaries and let the person know whether you want more, less, harder, softer, this implement, that implement. Like, you, it's dial-a-dom.
Yeah.
And that's because it's your body, right? Like, you get the right to say what happens to your body. And when people are like, I don't know what I like, it's like, okay, well, I'll start really, really super soft, and I'm going to stay there until you indicate otherwise. And then usually you have to remind them, right?
Yeah.
Like, how are you doing? Oh, I'd like a little more. Okay. And you go, just a little more. You know what I mean? And how are you doing? Right? And teaching them how to communicate quickly with both safe words, hand gestures, and their normal English words. I mean, and if you don't speak English, use your French or your German words or, like, whatever. But, you know, you got to be able to communicate quickly so that things stop. Because if you continue after someone needs you to stop, that's where things start to feel bad. And not in the sexy bad way. I mean, sexy bad, we'll take that. Rapey McRapey bad, no thank you.
Not quite.
And we did. We trained volunteers to do this thing. Most of them are actually bottoms.
Yep.
I actually find that's a huge advantage.
Well, and I mean, for a lot of them, ended up being switches, incidentally. So, I mean...
Yeah, because it feels good to give somebody that experience.
Always be willing to explore your options. But, you know, you don't have to fall into a role if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
For our purposes, I mean, for creating a safe, consensual environment, we wanted people who were not... well, I mean, they understood that they were there to provide a service. And it was a service that they had come to the center to get themselves so they could appreciate the value of that service. It wasn't just... Oh, I have to say, can I do this or do you want that? And I know it's so much talking. Talking's not sexy. They actually knew the value.
Yeah.
So there was no pushback. There was no trying to slide in a little bit of extra, you know, whatever.
Nobody coercing them. Nobody nudging them.
No.
And you're not even allowed to be like, oh, my partner would like you to do that. It's like, no, no, no.
Your partner has to ask me to do that.
Yeah, your partner has to actually ask enthusiastically for me to do that.
I mean, you can come up and tell me your partner would like to try that, but it's like, great, they can come talk to me about it.
Yeah, and the whole point was to send people out feeling empowered to have those conversations and having giving them a space where we normalize that aspect of it. And I didn't realize how deeply that was impacting people.
Yeah.
So this individual, and like just so much blessed that she shared this and was vulnerable enough to share it. But she said that I was flogging her and like checking in and like, and it was the first time that she realized that pain isn't actually a thing in and of itself. That it's about sensation, because we talk a lot about how there's intense sensation, gentle sensation, and, you know, and too intense sensation, right?
Yeah.
And our brain translates it. It's all the same signal, and our brain translates it. Is this good or is this bad? And we can choose to translate safe pain in a way that's good.
Yeah.
And so she was like, it's intense, but it's good, you know, and that in that moment, her ability to navigate her own body, like, shifted dramatically, and how that put her on this path where she was able to navigate sexually with strangers, even, how to feel safe with touch by setting these boundaries, by having these communications, I was blown away. Like, it's an amazing, it's a 3-part podcast, folks. So like, go and look for the BDSM and I think it's a somatic something, but like BDSM and connecting with your body. There's like 3 parts. It's well worth a listen. She explains it just beautifully, but it made me realize that even the event that causes us the most problems with sponsors and potential, you know, grants and stuff is doing a huge amount to not just talk about consent, but to give people the opportunity to feel the impact of enthusiastic consent, both from the top and the bottom. And I know we've told jokes about it, right? Because our bottoms go out, like, our bottoms. They're not, like, personally our bottoms, but, like, submissives that come into ASPEC and, you know, they take our courses and they come to our Taste of Kink and our dungeons and they're used to having a say over what happens to them.
Yeah.
And then they go out to other spaces and they're being told they're topping from the bottom.
Yeah. Or that, you know, that top doesn't take instruction or, you know, like, can't tame me, baby, I'm a wildfire. But it's like, okay, well, I don't want to play in your wildfire.
Yeah. And, like, even when it comes to safety stuff, they're like, well, I want to know what you're doing to mitigate the safety. And it's like, well, that's my responsibility. Yeah. Yeah. And before I put myself in your hands, I actually want to know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Right? And I remember, like, way back before we even had this deep of an understanding of consent, we had a partner or playmate who was trying to negotiate for some CNC. And one of the questions that was being asked of the potential individual that was being screened was like, what are you going to do when she resists? Because she is going to resist.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I'll just handle it. And it's like, how? How are you going to handle her full on fighting? Like, what exactly is your strategy? What are you going to do? And he didn't have strategy. And so he wasn't allowed to come and do the things. And it was like, he was like totally up in arms that we dared to question what he would do.
He just wanted to wing it.
Yeah. And it's like, you can't wing it in that kind of a situation and do it safely. You need to have a plan on how you're going to subdue the person because you got to do it safely.
To anyone listening who's not familiar with CNC, that's consensual and non-consent. So this was effectively staged.
Sexual assault.
Sexual assault. Rape play, as it's commonly known in the kink community. Although CNC is the preferred term these days. But
the way she preferred to do it was to have people she trusted vet the person.
Yeah.
and she didn't want to know who they are before or after.
Yep.
And she wanted to be able to fight and be subdued.
Yeah.
And, but, like, to know that only the things that she was game to happen would happen.
Yeah.
Right? And so that takes a lot of negotiation. Like, that is not something where you're like, sure, I'll come over and just wing it.
You know? Like, right. Not just that, but I mean, like, it's sort of like that old bad joke about, you know, don't turn this rape into a murder kind of thing. Is,
yeah.
Like, this can go badly. We do know people who, well, we know of people who engage in CNC play, you know, when they're running from their assailant, they really are running for a weapon. And it's not because they planned on killing this person, but the reaction, the adrenaline, the fear,
yeah.
It's like you need to be prepared to address that situation in a way where no one is getting permanently harmed, you or the other person. Because agreeing to the CNC doesn't actually give someone free license to do whatever they need to do in order to get what they want.
Yeah.
That's just a rape. That's not rape play.
Yeah, no, it still has to fall within the parameters of being safe for everybody before, during, and after.
Yeah.
And, like, even back then, we were, like, really startled. Like, why is this person so indignant about this? Like, like, right. Why is that a problem? Well, and now we
got to know them better. And, yeah, I was like, oh, they're indignant about everything you question them on.
Well, and it turns out they were adding sex to their kink scenes without consent, which, by the way, is rape.
That's right.
So, like, that red flag is actually pretty freaking accurate.
Yeah.
And so to hear from somebody that this didn't just give them the ability to feel empowered when they're navigating their own kink sessions, but that it created a space for them in which they suddenly became aware of just how often their physical boundaries get violated on a day-to-day basis and how that plays into creating sex negative space in your own head and brings the wrong kind of fear to the bedroom with you. And listening to her talk, oh God, she just, it was amazing. So she had this person come over and they'd been talking online for like ever. So like they're super excited to meet each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, had all kinds of wild, fun, sexy plans. But even though her mind knew this person, her body had never been around them. And she felt this reluctance and, you know, actually gave herself permission to think about, like, why am I feeling this? And told them, like, my body's reacting to you like you're a stranger. I don't feel safe. And he was super respectful, which is amazing. But he was like, whatever, you want to sit and watch a movie? You want me to go? Like, whatever you need. Totally, like, this isn't about me getting what I want, right? I want you to be comfortable, too. And so they watched TV for a while, and she was like, can I put my feet on your lap? And he was like, sure. And he was like, tell you what, like, let's teach your body how to trust, right? So I'm going to put my hand on your feet and massage your feet, and you're going to tell me no. And so they did that, and she waited a little bit and then was like, no, don't touch my feet. And so he took his hands off. Mm-hmm. And she said she could actually feel the wound strings in her body start to unwind. And so they continued to do that. And, like, for me, that is so incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. And, like, that this was a person she had never physically interacted with before. And that the only reason that she was able to navigate this is because she was relating it to her experience at Taste of Kink. And I'm just like, that's mind-boggling. Like, that could have gone really bad for her. She could have just agreed to have the sex, and then 3 days later been like, it didn't have to be that way.
Or, I mean, he could.
Why was that person okay with having sex with me when I wasn't excited, right?
Well, it's great. I mean, he's obviously, you know, had some good learning experiences to give him those sorts of tools to help her navigate it.
Absolutely. And then we gave her good tools to help her navigate it. And I just think that's fucking beautiful, and all the years of effort we've put into Aspect were absolutely worth it in that moment, you know. And then I was telling her about some of the resistance we've had to our charity license and stuff like that, how we're separating all those events out, And she was like, that is a damn shame. Because if people look at that, all they're thinking is deviant sex. Like, they're missing the point. And I was like, what?
Do you really think that would happen in North American society?
Right.
Silly goose.
And I was like, yeah, that's, we've been arguing this forever. Yeah. Right? And so, I don't know, it was really gratifying anyways. I wanted to share with you because, I mean, this stuff wouldn't have happened without you. And so to know that what we actually pictured when we first started planning this and turned out it was different than what our partners had pictured. Yeah. Right? And, like, no shade on them either. Like, we all wanted a place that was safe, but we all had different meanings as to what we meant by that. They wanted a place that was safe to explore swinging, and we wanted a place that was safe consent-wise.
Yeah.
And I get it, right? Like, and and they wanted a business, and
yes,
we wanted something that was more community-minded. So, yeah, like, we had to separate that out, and that's okay.
And that's, I mean, something maybe worth touching on is that it's really hard to build, you know, a club or a community center of a support group or whatever if you're also financially reliant on the people walking in the door. Because that means your consent culture is being dictated by the people who bring the money in.
Yeah.
And that basically means your consent culture is going to be
based on the power structure.
Roll the fucking dice to see who's walking in the door.
Well, and, like, let's admit it, right? The people who are the most vulnerable to assault and
exploitation
are those that don't have the dollar bills.
Yeah. The marginalized, you know, people. For whatever reason, whether they're, you know...
Because we get told all the time, like, just jack your membership, jack your prices.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but that's not the point of the events.
Yeah, we're not actually trying to pay our mortgage with a consent education community center. That's, surprisingly, that's, you know, not a steady stream of cash rolling in the door.
Well, no cash rolling in the door for us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, no, it was a non-profit, but I mean, they were looking at it as a for-profit. You know, in their minds, when we were talking. But yeah.
Absolutely. And a lot of people, I think that ASPEC is a non-profit, but that we're getting paid.
Yeah.
And we're not. Nobody's getting a salary there. The only time there has been a salary there, it was a grant from the government just for that salary.
Yeah.
And it helped us build the programs into the sex education that's there now, which is incredible. I'll take it, you know? But it's wild to me that all of these communities, your swinger communities, your gay leather communities, your why can't I think of what the other thing is for swinging? Polyamory.
Oh,
there we go.
Okay.
Your kink communities, that we all talk about consent, we all talk about boundaries, but when it comes to the interactions, it's very hit or miss, and I think the polyamory community does it the best.
Right.
Because they do focus on the communication as a huge part.
Mm-hmm.
And I know our friends, like, listening to the way Lauren talks to newbies at Aurora Social Club, they definitely talk a lot about, you know, like, you don't have to jump in and have sex with another couple. Like, you can
just
go and watch and then go back to your table and talk about it. And then you could go sit on the bed beside somebody having sex and make out a little.
Mm-hmm.
And then go back to your table and talk about how it felt. Which, funny, because that's kind of what we did when we went to the spanking thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
But without somebody telling us that that was a good way to navigate it.
And in fact, we got some funny looks from people, too, when we did. So they weren't really nurturing that safe space. But
No.
They allowed it.
They allowed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if we had been like, hey, we're new, this is what we want to do, people would have been all for it. You know, because it was a friendly crowd down there.
It was. But I mean, that was also very much a spanking event where sex was happening behind closed doors. So,
yeah,
it was like a separation of kink and sex.
Oh, God, you're right. But the BDSM community in Edmonton, before we opened, was a no-sex kink space.
Yeah. Well, I mean, except there was always that, you know, so-and-so has a private dungeon. Anything goes there. So if that's what you want, just make friends with so-and-so.
Yeah, but like even in their no sex spaces, there's still a lot of raping and grapersin shit happening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was always like, you know, pushing boundaries. There was, you know, maybe someone stuck a finger inside someone else during the middle of the scene, but not like whip out my dick and push it in somebody kind of stuff.
And could we do something about this fucking trope that BDSM is about strong, masculine men who break women and train them to be sex goddesses? Like,
you gotta write a new story of O, then.
Like, I'm so tired of clients coming to me, and this is what they think they have to put up with to experience a spanking. Yeah. It's like, no. Like, you do, I mean, if you want to do a total power exchange in that way, like, go for it. And I understand why people were so confused about our relationship, because I considered it a total power exchange, but not in the I gave up my right to be a human sort of way.
Do what I say, slave.
Yeah, no. I mean,
If the people want to do the master-slave thing, that's fine. But it was not our thing. And, you know, we did other things. Things that worked for us.
I still can't get over the argument that went on in the community as to what our roles to each other were.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, why are you guys having a vote in this? Like, how does this work?
You're not this and that. You're this and this.
Yeah, like, my people telling us, like, you guys are master slave. And then the leather community going, oh, no, you're not. You're just a smart-ass bottom. Mm. And it's like,
top
what?
Bottom.
Oh, no, not even a bottom. That's what he said to me. You're not even a bottom.
Oh?
And it's like, how am I not even a... Like, I don't even understand where you get off labeling somebody you're not a fucking relationship with.
Sure.
Like, I don't recall asking any of them for their opinion on what we were doing behind closed doors.
No, but they were certainly willing to volunteer those opinions.
And I know it's not just us, because even if you go look up Shay's stuff and check out Remedial Ropes, for anybody listening... But she and her partner, why can't I remember his name?
Oh.
Probably because I have, like, the biggest crush on her. Because she does all that self-suspension. She's so cute.
Yeah.
But they won, like, the leather power exchange thing. And when they're playing, she's like, go harder, go softer. Don't use that. Don't hit there. Huh? And people are like, ah, she's not a sub. And it's like, well, she's your sub, so what do you fucking care?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If it's working for them, why are you so invested? And it was only recently that I unpacked why they're so invested in what our relationship is and you know, why this person can't be considered a submissive. And it's because we're setting a consent example for people around us that makes shitty doms look bad.
Well, yeah. And probably challenging some of their own perceptions of themselves.
Yeah. You
know, like, if our titles were similar to theirs, but our behavior was totally different, it might be like, well, when Angel asks Mark not to use that implement, he doesn't use it. Why do you tell me that, you know, I just have to suck it up?
Yeah. How come Angel gets to glow all the time and I'm in bed crying? Like, how does this work? And it's almost like some people come to being a dom so that they can abuse.
Almost. Could be. I'm sure one or two.
And I know when I first met you and I was trying to tell you, like, you're an authentic, like, natural dom. I wasn't trying to say you're a natural abuser. And I think that caused a lot of confusion for people because they felt the need to constantly school you in how to be harder and meaner and less consensual.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, like, don't fucking touch this. Like, this is exactly beautiful, and it doesn't need to change. Do you need some skills? Yes. Would it be great if you could meet somebody with the same mindset so you guys could do some scheming? Absolutely. Well, it'd be great for me. And let's work for you. But that scheming can't include how are we going to do things so that Angel doesn't think that they're safe.
Well, not only that, but a lot of the doms who were willing to, you know, quote-unquote mentor me or guide me or whatever, were always like, and then I can walk out of the closet, you know, and...
It's like, no.
And it's like, that's not why I'm here.
And by the way, somebody mentoring you, it doesn't get paid in sex. That's not how that fucking works.
No. I mean,
that's called nice guy syndrome.
Yeah. And it's,
It's gross.
Yeah, it's really just unpleasant.
I mean, just be honest. You just want to fucking fuck me? Like, just say that.
Yeah. Or my partner in this case.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, like, don't pretend that you want to do it because it would be fun to take part in creating an amazing scene for an individual, when what you actually want is an excuse to be allowed to abuse or have sex with someone you don't have access to. And that's, it's just so many shades of fucked up that I can't even wrap my head around it.
Yeah. And I mean, some people have come to us with the intention of, you know, teach me how to do the thing, and then maybe, you know, if we all have a good connection, we can do something together.
But they're honest about it.
They're honest about it, and they're at least upfront or hinting at it. They're not like, I want to learn from you, and then once they start learning, they're like, okay, now fuck me, you're my partner. Like, that doesn't come up. At least not with the people we spend time with, because
yeah,
we probably don't give out the vibe we're going to be receptive to that.
And we're so, you know, once hurt, million times shy, that even people that might be a really good fit playmate-wise, like, we have a really fucking high bar.
Yeah.
And that's because we don't want to fuck up our relationship. You know? Like, we've spent years investing ourselves into this relationship and ourselves and growing. I'm not willing to let somebody in who might hurt me. I'm not willing to let somebody in who might hurt you.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to let somebody in where that might be so unhealthy that we end up hurting them. Because that in turn hurts us, right?
Like, yeah, it's, I don't feel shitty.
No, nobody wants to be that person. And that's too bad, too, because I think we miss out on some opportunities that could be a lot of fun and healthy.
Sure.
Because we have an unrealistic bar right now as a way to protect ourselves.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. It's just not where we were or where we, you know, are at the moment, but certainly everything changes with time.
Yeah.
And experience.
And man, I'm so tired of all these children coming into the center and learning how to do the thing so awesome, where I'm like, that is somebody I can never, ever ask if they're interested in topping me, because I feel like I'm their mom. Mm.
Okay.
Now, to be fair, they're all like in their 20s, and some of them in their 30s, but like...
Kids is a relative term. Here.
Yeah.
They're just like, too young for us.
Too young, yeah. It's like, go get experience, and then come back. And the last person I said that to did come back, hey?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, they went and got a whole bunch of experience and came back and was like, so now that I know how to do the things, and I'm like, ooh, I really want to talk about this, but I'm just so not in the sexy place right now, so.
I'm not asking who they were, but what were they learning?
They were learning how to let their sensual domly-dom stuff out without adding that toxic masculinity.
Oh.
Yeah, and fucking kicking ass at it, too. Yeah, really, really proud of him. He's done an amazing job. I hope you're listening. But done an amazing job. But I'm not in a place where I have room for the sexy shit right now.
That's a suspicious flag.
Oh, you think this person was in the truck convoy?
Oh, I think there's a good bet.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. We've got to get, like, the Cree flag or something and fly it. That'd be fun. Mm. I would really like to see the Indigenous communities of Canada, or North America for that matter, get together and design a Turtle Island flag that they can all be happy with.
That would take a lot of work.
Probably less work than it would take for all the white people to get together and
put a flag. That's a given, yeah. But I mean, it's still a lot of people from a lot of different cultures.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm all for it.
But like, if you were to, like, even if we did it, like, by area, right? So, like, West Coast is all, like, Cree, Sioux, Blackfoot.
I kind of thought that the Every Child Matters, the flag that people were putting up for that would have been good if,
Well, unfortunately, that was a commercialized flag, I think.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell, too, right? Like, because you gotta go and look and see who owns the organization.
Right.
When I was looking for Every Child Matters t-shirts, I know we're getting totally off track, but when I was looking, most of the places that were selling them were not Indigenous owned.
That's not surprising at all.
And I would be okay paying an Indigenous artist to make the shirts, or if the money is going into the indigenous social services community, I would be willing to do it, but not a white run. Like a savior community, I'm not interested in doing that.
No, no, it's kind of like how those oil field companies were all buying ground penetrating radar when they thought that the looking for the graves was going to be the next big cash in.
Oh, fuck, people are so gross.
It's like, just let the indigenous community, you know, form its own companies, do the ground penetrating radar, you know, give them the money to do it, and then they can take the grants. And
yeah, and walk them through the fucking permits instead of going, oh, you don't know how to navigate it?
No.
It's like, no shit, they don't know how to navigate it. You've never let them sit at the table. If you don't let them sit at the table, how are they supposed to fucking learn the things? And why are these things set up? Oh, I'm so angry.
That's a different podcast.
Different podcast. Talk about the sexy things.
Yes, anyway. But yeah, with definitely with our Domly Dogs, I remember...
Domly Dogs?
Well...
Master Lord Thundercock.
Years ago, when you first started doing your podcast, we were talking about, you know, we need to get a few of our non-toxic doms together, or just tops in general.
Yeah.
And have kind of like a little round table radio show where they talk about, you know, how they navigate situations, or what works for them, what doesn't.
And then we started looking for those people.
Yeah, and it's like, well, there's maybe two other people that are on the same page, more or less, and...
I think there's more people, but, like, you don't find them because they're not shopping newbies.
Well, not just that, but, I mean, like, they're not out there advertising, you know, I'm available for social consulting or whatever because I'm an ethical dom. They're just doing their own life, right?
Yeah, so it's like saying nice guy, right? If you've got to say I'm an ethical dom...
You're probably not.
Probably not. Yeah. It's like, you shouldn't have to say it.
And it's like I am familiar with navigating the ethical minefield.
Or how about I'm comfortable admitting that I'm still learning.
Okay.
You know, like, it's because, I mean, we can sit here and go, oh, we're ethical sadists and like, whatever. Yeah. But the reason why we run the class on ethical sadism is because we learn while we're teaching.
Yeah.
Like, it's a great way to learn because you get people challenging you and you get to expand your mind and you have to do all the research and put all the thought into it, which means you're developing self-awareness. And
sometimes you make a mistake in front of the entire class and you have to own that.
Well, what was that?
Oh, I was just thinking of that spanking class we did in Regina.
Oh my God.
Where, I mean, to be very clear, everyone involved was extremely happy with the class, but I had no idea that my bottom was calling red because they were using a different safe word than we agreed upon. And they interpreted calling red as saying move on to something else, not stop the scene. So our communication was so bad right off the bat that I could have actually harmed them, you know.
And not known until too late.
I mean, not physically harmed them because I wasn't playing heavy or anything, but I wasn't actually responding to what they were saying because our communication lines were clearly established or being followed once we thought we'd established.
Yeah. But the message got encoded and
jumbled, and to be fair, like, Regina is a really repressed place, so having an honest conversation about kink there was challenging.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And, like, taboo is the kink community. So, like, that was...
For Regina,
That was, wow. Yeah, back to your ethical doms at a round table. I would love to have that kind of a conversation, but I think it's the bottoms that you need to have at the table. Talking about what works for them and what they notice as red flags.
Yeah, but I wanted to...
You wanted to learn.
Well, no, not just to learn, but I wanted to model, you know, this is the kind of thing you can do. You can feel good about yourself as a person, and you still get the sex and the play you want. You just have to listen to what the other person's saying and not just say, you know, I'm pretty sure this is what they want. They implied this is what they wanted, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. Like, don't go down that road. But just take the time to establish that communication and that clear, unfiltered, you know, unmuddied pathway of back and forth and you'll get people coming back over and over and over for the play and the sex. But it's that short-term gratification that so many people in the BDSM community get caught up in. You know, I just want the spanking. I just want to give the spanking. If something else crops up, I'll navigate it on the spot, which is kind of like what the CNC guy was struggling with.
See, and I kind of feel like you're being naive.
Why?
Because you think that the reason why DOMs are out there violating people's consent is because they're an instant gratification to have the sex and the spanking, but it's not. It's because they want that power they feel when they abuse someone.
I'm sorry, I don't get off on that.
And I think this is, like, if we're going to talk about violating people's consent, like, this is a really big misconception in society, is that rape is because people can't navigate sex safely. But, like, you think, because you're thinking of your own experiences being taught to not notice when somebody is no longer reciprocating.
Right.
Right? Where it's not normalized to stop and say, do you need to stop?
Yeah.
Right? Which, by the way, you've always been amazing at anyways. I know there was improvements throughout the relationship and whatnot, but you're not sexually coercive. Because you don't get off on making other people feel helpless so that you can feel like you have value. And when we're talking about people who are abusive, rapey, and whatnot, research shows that these people are not looking for sex. They're not looking for giving a spanking. They're looking to abuse someone because they need to feel powerful. And that's not the same thing. And I think, unfortunately, because we call it power exchange, a lot of people think, like, when they're coming in to experience the things and give up control in some aspect, that they have to put up with that to get what they want.
Right.
And you don't. And, I mean, and this is what we tell our bottoms all the time, right? You don't have to put up with anything you don't want. Like, that's not, it's not the ticket price. It's not a commodity. This is an exchange. Right? So you get to explore giving sensations and being in control and that satisfaction of knowing that you created that safe space.
Yeah.
Right? And I, in turn, also have to create safe space by being honest about what's going on. Right? And I get to enjoy the receiving of those sensations, trusting you to keep that safe space for my body. You know what I mean? And knowing that we're on this journey together. Like, it's not one person's breaking you to reform you. Like, what the fuck is that? But I honestly appreciate your sweetness. I really do. But the majority of tops out there that behave in this non-consensual, creepy way is because they were drawn into kink because it gives them access to doing that kind of thing under the shroud. Normalizing it as kink.
I mean, I see that with, like,
all of our Richards and Berries.
The Richards and Berries, yeah. I mean, the specific serial rapists that we know of. And you know, when it's just, like, I don't know, I guess I am naive.
Yeah,
I would. I would like to think.
You would never hurt somebody like that.
I'd feel extremely bad if I mistakenly hurt someone like that because I misinterpreted something. Like, the incidences where I've gone over the line, I carry, right? Like, that's something I pull the weight of. So, yeah, I just wouldn't seek it out. But not everyone's programmed the same way, and we don't have the same experiences and traumas, so...
And then I think, too, that, like, we found out in our own relationship that there is another genre of people who cause harm. And it's because of the messages we're taught around how to get sex, how to get that gratification. And they are coercive messages, you know? And it's like, you can nag someone, and then if they just give up arguing, it's okay.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that translates into the kink arena as well, where I think some people think that you have to be mean to be a dom. You know? And it's like,
well, I mean, yes.
Anybody can be mean, but can you lead?
Yeah.
You know? Can you
can you
hold power without being mean?
Yeah.
You know? Because, I mean, we tease you about you being mean, but, like, you're not mean. You're not doing things to cause me hurt. You're doing things because you know I enjoy it, right? Like, there's a huge difference there.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
I can just take pleasure from some of the things that seem mean.
Yeah, but you never used to. You started taking pleasure because you like seeing pleasure. Mm. And if doing this can cause so much pleasure, of course you're going to get off on it.
That's true.
That's like when I hear people go, oh, I don't allow sex toys in the bedroom. It's like, oh, you don't like other people's pleasure. Right? It has to be, you have to be able to take credit for it or it's no good.
Yeah.
And for you, creating that safe space and seeing somebody drop their boundaries and let you in is an incredible experience. And I think that's the thing that needs to be taught.
I wonder if it can be taught.
I think it can be to people that are in that second genre where they're following a script because they think it's the only script. Not people who are using those scripts because they like to have the power over someone else.
Hmm.
And it's like, because I've made consent mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, like you think back to the clothes peg incident and whatever, and I'm just grateful that my friend was able to tell me that why they felt uncomfortable, how that felt for them, so that I could go, holy shit. Like, and that's where we came up with the you can't negotiate during the scene.
Yep.
Because, you know, she said yes.
Mm-hmm.
She seemed like she wanted to do it. It was actually kind of her idea.
Yeah.
You know, but I shouldn't have allowed it. I was the one in control of the scene. And I would never do that again.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's, like I say, you carry that weight.
You do.
And, yeah, it can.
And, I mean, I'm grateful that she was able to move forward from that without hating my guts. But, like, she didn't owe that to me either.
No.
And she didn't owe me the explanation either.
No.
And I think that's a big misunderstanding we have in society, is that if somebody is doing something coercive, we have to be able to pack up our own pain and say, hi, I'm here to help you learn a lesson. And it's like, no. Like, again, you gotta, that nobody owes you that shit.
No.
But we could make room for it at Aspect to have those learning things. But yeah, I think there's a lot more to unpack there. I would love to talk to somebody who's done research on coercive behaviors that maybe has something to add to this conversation. So if anybody listening has like research papers they want to hook me up with or books or whatever, I'd love to be more educated on this because I'm just kind of taking my bachelor's degree and my life experience and mushing it up together. So, but yeah, it's very sweet that you think that we just have a table of doms teaching doms to not be rapey McRaversons.
I have unrealistic ideas.
And I think idealistic is better. I actually believe that harm happens by accident. That's very sweet.
It's not necessarily by accident, but I mean, sometimes I just think that I guess I'm too simplistic in what I imagine people's goals to be. Because I see them coming to the Swingers Club or the BDSM dungeon, and I'm like, well, they want to do the things, so they're going to try to be manipulative in order to get what they want, but they don't have to be manipulative. I mean, you don't actually have to be, you know, like some super fit 20-something athletic guy with a closet full of floggers and toys in order to get the play with the submissives. I mean, you can you can be a slightly doughy, balding, middle-aged man and still have people lining up to experience things.
Cracking one at yourself?
At where I was, let's say, you know, 8 years ago.
Okay, it's not like you to make fun of someone's looks like that. So it has to be you.
Specifically referring to me. I am bald and middle-aged, and I was doughier a few years back. So, but I still had people lining up to play with me. And this was people who were younger, people who were older, the same age, people who were like what I would.
All genders and sexualities.
Yeah, it's like there was really no shortage. And I honestly, I mean, you might tell me I'm cute and everything, hon, but I mean, I know I'm not like a 10. So I don't think that was the primary motivator for these people.
He's a 10.
Don't inflate my ego.
No, and this actually, it just keep coming back to it. Like, through all of our conversations, this always is coming up, this what drew people to us, because it was really confusing for us.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were in Fort St. John, we were providing the space.
Yeah.
Right? So obviously people are going to flock to us. You're providing the space. They feel like, you know, they have to suck up to you or whatever. And you're making yourself public as accessible in a space where people don't even talk about this stuff. But when we moved to the city, we thought we could just blend in. And there's, like, these people, like, following us around and stuff, and we didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until our pet was talking about how, because we don't hold back, right? Like, when we're topping someone, whether we're doing it together or separately, we give ourselves to that. And we honor the person, and even if we're completely not interested in them, and we're not getting any sort of gratification sexually from it, we do our utmost to make it the best thing they could have experienced. And she had to explain to me, like, that is not normal. Like, people don't do that. And so, of course, people want to experience that more and more. And that just breaks my heart. Like, why are you putting your hands on people's bodies if you're not going to honor that they're letting you in to that vulnerable space? Like, and I think because I've experienced trauma, and I think because you were exposed to trauma at such an early age, that you developed a lot of compassion for it. I think for us, that we've brought that into the way that we express our kink. So when we're, you know, spanking somebody, or, you know, you're spanking me, like, whatever, we're in it. And I mean, you even kiss that way. You kiss like there's nothing else in the world to do, you know? And I thought it was because you just desired me so much right up until typhoid Andrea. Mark is joking.
The plague rat.
But no, that's just how Mark kisses. Like, he brings his entire self into what he does with his body when it's with another person. And, like, honestly, even when you're doing things on your own, like, you give yourself to the moment. And I don't think a lot of people do that. I think a lot of people are performing, that they're thinking more about how other people perceive them.
Yeah.
Because I can remember so many times we'd be playing in a public space, and you'd have to, like, the one time where my skin opened a little, and you had to, like, stop and go get the DM and find a Band-Aid, because, you know, you're in a public space, so you can't be sharing blood fluids.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm coming out of my dopey thing, and I look up, and, like, there's all these fucking people gathered around staring at us. And I'd like to say that was because we were newer, like, we were in that new stage of our relationship. But even when we hosted that spanking class at Aspect, I mean, I was so in the moment with what we were doing, even though we were talking and, like, instructing and, like, that kind of stuff, that I was pretty fucking shocked when I looked up and realized there was 50 people crowded in that little room. You know, same with when we shot the spanking porn scene. When I looked up and realized, like, how attentive, like, oh, like, holy fuck, these people are watching me. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, and I say I get off on the exhibition, but I think what I actually get off on is being able to create that safe little space. And then you look up and realize that you felt safe and vulnerable, and yet there's all these people you don't know there. Like, you manage, like, that is, I get high off that. Like, that is incredibly empowering. And people aren't used to experiencing that. Most, like, we've noticed in public play spaces a lot, most people are performing for the crowd.
That's true.
And they're not thinking about the person they're doing it with.
Yeah.
And that's heady stuff.
I remember...
It's intoxicating.
Yeah, early on, when we first started exploring the BDSM scene in Edmonton, I had a discussion. I don't know if it was with our mentor or one of the other tops, but it was about just that. About how some people come out to the public spaces, just show everyone, you know.
And that can be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it once with a suspension, like with our friend from up north that came.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, can we perform? And she was like, fuck yeah, do it. You know what I mean? So I was able to focus more on the crowd and play to the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't as fun. But, I mean, it made a good show.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were the sort of rope top who was relying on, you know, being paid to show up to clubs and bars and whatever to put on that show, that's definitely, like, you need to get people interested in what you're doing, so you gotta do it.
Yeah.
You gotta be performative. But if it's for you and your partner, then it's kind of like, I just don't give a fuck what the audience thinks, or if there is an audience, because they're not part of the scene.
No. It's, I mean, if they want to watch, they can watch. Oh. Do so quietly, thank you very fucking much.
I don't need high fives from the other doms, or, you know, love letters from the other subs, because I've done such an amazing job of topping you. It's like, that's not why I'm here. I'm here for you. And, yeah, we're in a public space because it's good to, you know, stretch your wings and see what you're comfortable with. And, yeah, that informs or involves being unclothed or being vulnerable in front of strangers.
Yep.
Which, not a bad thing, as it turns out, because it tears off a lot of those social taboos that we burden ourselves with.
And I think that really sums up the whole thing. It's all about the social constructs, right?
Yeah.
They make sex taboo, but you're allowed to be coercive about it. That's okay. Not allowed to enjoy it, though.
No.
Well, unless you were coercive, and then you can enjoy that.
Right, because you won.
Yeah, because you win. You win the vajayjay. It's a prize.
Mm.
But yeah, that's, fuck me. I hate it that you're onto something there. But I remember Ronnie telling us, right? Like, you guys, you pull people into your inner circle, and I don't think you understand what that does to people.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like we're all that. You know, like, no offense.
No.
But I don't think we're superstars.
As
I don't think we're unusual.
I should be offended.
Jackass.
Yes.
But I don't look at myself and go, oh, what I have is special, and everybody should be drawn to me, like moths to it. Like, fuck no. Like, I'm just another fucking broken human. Struggling through the world, doing my best.
I mean,
and I don't think what we're doing is unusual.
Yeah, part
or
of
shouldn't be.
Well, part of what we had was unusual, in that we've always been supplying a space to the community. So whether that was our living room up north, or whether that was our garage in Edmonton, or whether that was the community center,
yeah,
we've always provided a space. And I mean, I think that was unintentional in drawing people in. But it's probably one of the reasons that people were first attracted to us, and then it's like, oh my god, like, these people have this relationship, and I want that same kind of energy and safety and vulnerability for myself, so, you know, I'm going to try to get closer to them, either, you know, to become part of it, or to emulate it, or whatever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was certainly a little bit of honey for some people.
No, I know some people were drawn to us because they wanted to be part of the in crowd, and part of the in crowd was that we had a space. Like,
yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But I think she was talking about why people are so hurt when we don't want to do the things with them again.
Yeah.
And it's like, we thought we were just showing you how to do the things. And it's great that you felt really connected, because it means we were doing our job and making you feel cherished and safe. And you should feel cherished and safe when you're giving your vulnerability to somebody.
Yeah.
Like, in my oh so jaded, trauma informed opinion, if you can't cherish the person who's allowing you access to their most deepest and darkest fantasies, then you're a fucking asshole. And when somebody comes to me and they're like, I have never done this before, and will you do this? It's like, I am so fucking honored that they trust me. You're hitting somebody, and they're trusting you to make it a pleasant experience. Like, that's kind of a fucking big deal.
Yeah.
And I never would have had the guts to ask somebody, because you watch people doing their floggings and whatever, and it's usually very experienced players who are heavy, because that's what seems to be celebrated in the spaces.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's like,
I still remember, oh, they're fluffy. Angel's a fluffy bottom. I was like, do you mean because I'm chubby? No, no, no. You guys just don't play hard, because we don't do blood play. You come over here and you fucking play like we play. We'll fucking talk about playing hard, you fucking jackasses. But what they actually meant is, we don't play on the opposite side of consent. We don't play abusive.
Right.
And I didn't realize that was the standard, I guess.
Well, I mean, again, consider the source there too, right? Kind of an older school pro-leather person.
And we heard it from everybody. That's just the one that really stood out. Well, she kept saying
she
it.
She kept bringing it up over and over and over.
She's like, I never said that. And the whole group looked at her like, what?
Like 5 fucking minutes ago you said that.
Yeah. And I was like, and I know she meant no harm by it. No. And like, I'm not mad about it. But it disheartens me because when you're looking at what the kink community celebrates in public, right? Like in the public spaces, like the shared dungeon spaces, the workshops and whatever, yeah. Bottoms that can take an incredible amount of pain are celebrated. Yeah. And unfortunately, if you have to dish out that degree of pain, I'm wondering what kind of trauma they're bringing forward.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong. You know what I mean? There could be some people who just like I can process pain in some pretty interesting ways, and maybe they've taken that further. Like, I'm not the exceptional, I'm aware. But the fact that we celebrate that and we call people who can't do that beginners, and that we celebrate DOMs who can push people to where they break down and sob and beg and you just take it a little further, is that's fucking problematic because we're not celebrating the connection. We're not celebrating the incredible amount of pleasure that's not even just sexual pleasure. Like, it's, and you know me, I'm not really into the whole spiritual thing, but it is beyond the corporeal.
Right.
You know, like, that connection, you can't experience that if the person is focused on hurting you. Mm-hmm. You can't experience that with somebody whose goal is to push you past where you feel safe. You know, unless they're doing that to be able to stop and show you it's safe, to reconnect you to that sense of safety, like the tell me to stop touching your foot guy, you know?
Right.
Like, that's incredibly intuitive. Like, I'm so fucking impressed. But, yeah, it hurts my heart. And for the people out there that like to put on that show, like, awesome. If you're getting something out of it, that's great. But as a community, I think we need to stop holding that up as the goal and recognizing that the goal needs to be personal for each person coming in, and that those differences need to be celebrated too.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my rant. I feel like I lost you at some point.
Me?
Yeah.
No. I was just letting you say your piece.
Sit off, peace.
Say your piece.
Yeah. But I know we ran afoul of that shit too, yeah. Right? Where, you know, people always give you advice on how to ramp it up and like whatever. And it's like,
yeah,
who invited you?
9 times out of 10, it was them attempting to invite themselves. Like, I could show you how to hit her harder. I could show you how, you know, to do whatever. And it's like, I can swing harder if I want to. That's just not fun for either of us. So I'm not.
Dude, we'd rather have those waves. Like, why would we give up the waves? You know, like, why is everybody trying to build to a point of intolerance rather than building it up to a place where it's just slightly too uncomfortable and bring it down a little and then building it up like you're creating multiple orgasms? Like, I don't understand why more people aren't riding that wave.
I would imagine it's because they've, I mean, we kind of fell into that. So maybe it's like, if you don't have the roadmap, you don't really know where you're going.
But right? The reason that we fell into that is because we were trying to capture that space. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It was like, I want to be able to stay in that space more. And I would get to a point where I couldn't take it. What else can you do but bring it back down? Like, that's how consensual human beings behave.
Yeah, but imagine how, let's say, not to pick on a specific demographic, people with penises tend to be a little bit more, you know, get it up, get it in, wrap it up, get out.
Oh, this is about how people masturbate, isn't it?
It's basically, it's like, if I can get you screaming and crying and your bottom is red and swollen, then I've done what I came here to do, so let's wrap it up before my arm gets tired. And if I have to beat you harder for 10 seconds, remember, give him 3 of your best.
Yeah, that always really bothered me.
Yeah. That means to give your three hardest strikes at the end of a scene, whether or not the bottom
is ready for that.
Yeah. Or even once more after the first hardest strike. Like, there's still two more coming.
Which, I mean, really fun for roleplay. Like, yeah. Like, man, that's my favorite kind of porn. But, like...
But in reality, it's like, if you don't understand your bottom and their limits, and you're not familiar with them, and this isn't a pre-established routine, it's actually incredibly non-consensual.
Yeah.
So...
And on top of that, you're setting them up to drop harder, too, because if you don't bring the scene down, then it's like you almost jumped out of the airplane and somebody jerked you back into the plane. You don't get to express that, and your nervous system gets stuck in the freight part, and you don't ever get to come back down to feeling safe, and that's fucked.
No. It's like you're firing a shot of adrenaline into the motor and then turning it off.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? You know?
Or I guess it would be ether with a motor, but, you know, yeah. Same idea.
V-fib! Yeah. And what the hell? Well, that's what they always yell in the medical shows when the heart rhythm's not right. You've got to shock them.
Defib is defibrillator.
No, the V. What? On the you use the defibrillator, but they say the person is in V-fib. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've been watching that Australian one, so that's what they shout all the time. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird reference for y'all. Right. How do these conversations really look behind the scenes? This is how.
Natural.
This is how they look. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
I love it when people are like, let's do a podcast on this. And then we end up talking about something completely different.
That was our intro. Now we're going to talk about something completely unrelated.
Yeah. We're going to be hosting a podcast just on the problems in the queer community when it comes to consent. And particularly around non-monogamy. Because, you know, I think that we turn to the queer community a lot for information because they've been doing these things longer.
Yeah.
And yet there's a lot of toxicity there because gayness is still not accepted in society. I mean, it's legal, but it's still not accepted.
It's legal depending on where you live.
Well, in Canada.
Yeah. Lord only knows.
Not in Florida.
Or Texas.
Well, Texas, you can't be trans.
Well, you can't, yeah. But let's just be fair.
Or pregnant.
I think a couple of the states actually retracted their gay marriage bills.
Yeah, no, quite a few. It's actually a mess down there right now. They really need to do something. I'm just at a loss.
I'm sorry, Americans.
Yeah, I always thought the Americans were supposed to be ahead of us. Do you know what I mean?
I think so, that, like, was always the narrative, because they were an economical powerhouse.
Oh.
But,
oh, because they have an army.
A big army.
And I also think it's really funny that we're always talking about how amazing their army is when our infantry kicks their ass every year. But whatever.
And I seem to recall we had really good performance with the armored divisions in the war games, too.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, I remember.
That must be new.
No, it was older. I remember when they were talking about it, like, way back when I was in high school. Like, the M1 Abrams were, like, the big thing on the battlefield in Desert Storm or whatever. And we were still using, like, not World War II, but kind of from that era of armored divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And outperforming the Abrams because they had just better coordination on the teams and, I guess, better strategies because they weren't relying on the technology as much. But that's all, you know, second and third hand information. I'm not a war historian, but. That's what I was told.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I need to Google that, maybe. But,
But anyways.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, what that has to do with anything, I don't know, but.
We were talking about different countries.
We got somewhere.
Yeah, we always do this shit.
We got somewhere.
Tangents. We got tangents. Okay.
Yeah. And I know that I was, like, talking about how the swinging community doesn't get it, and the kink community doesn't get it. But, like, I want to be clear, we got lots of friends in the swinging community that do get it.
Yep.
We've got lots of friends in the kink community that do get it. And most of them are people that do take on some sort of community
leadership
role reluctantly.
Yeah.
Like, they're always the ones that don't really want to do it.
That's kind of like the person that you actually want in charge, whether you're talking about a kink community or, let's say, politics.
Yeah, it's like they did it because there needed to be a safe space, but they would be totally cool if somebody else wanted to come along and run it.
As long as they were willing to do it at least as well or better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, fuck knows, I'd step away from Aspect if somebody would come in and do my job with the same passion that I'm bringing and honoring the mission statement. And I really hope more people do step up, because we're starting to see a lot of people gravitate towards it and bringing their piece, and it just has to be a lot bigger than me, and it's growing that way, and I love it.
Certainly hope.
Yeah.
We get more leaders like you.
Yep. The founder would like to retire, please. Mm. So let's get this funding in. Let's, you know, get these training modules built. I'm going to start doing videos so that you folks have, you know, access to where it came from in the first place. But, like, just, yeah, bring your passion.
One lonely man.
Sex positive talk, where shame ends and nothing is off limits. Brought to you by Advocating for Sex Positive Education and Consent Culture, EmpoweredHearts.com, and GTFOradio.ca. I'm your host, Angel, queer femby, sexuality educator, and sex coach.